Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
Welcome. How you doing? It's Progress After Dark. Thank you, Dino Badala, for the excellent lead-in that I can never hope to measure up to. I'm Fugelsang, aided and abetted by the most dangerous production squad in radio, Chris Hauselt, running this beast out of South Carolina, the great Thea Harper producing our show out of Brooklyn. For the next 3 hours, we're going to be coming at you with facts, empathy, music, and something resembling, but not quite achieving, wit. Bob Seska is with us tonight. The God Squad is here in hour number two. Dr. Tracy Pearson answers all your political ravings at hour number three. Let's have some fun with you, our most important cast member. Lot to get through. A Tulsa medical examiner's report revealed transgender teenager Nex Bennett died of a suicidal mix of Benadryl and Prozac a day after being bullied and harassed and assaulted by a group of classmates at school. Cue the right wingers saying that this proves everything's fine, the kid was damaged, the kid committed suicide. Can I just tell you, trans kids don't commit suicide. A trans child's suicide is murder. Lauren Boebert told reporters she's not going to take part in the June special election to replace Ken Buck in Congress. She's likely going to switch districts and run for Buck's seat in the general election next fall and lose. A New Mexico man has died of the bubonic plague, the first such death in 4 years. Now, bats and rodents in the desert southwest, we know, are carriers of the bubonic plague, but transmission to humans is very, very rare. So that means if it ever becomes an epidemic, we'll have to come up with a vaccine that right-wingers will refuse to take. 866-997-4748 is our number. We'd love to hear from you all night long. 866-997-GRIT. Tonight's show goes out to Elise Stefanik, representing the 21st District of New York State. She tweeted today, "I am proud to announce that I secured $1,857,000 for a water district development project for the town of Messina. In this year's appropriations process, this funding will go toward providing public water service to the residents of Messina." And then she hashtags in all caps, "results." We began the show last night talking about Elise Stefanik and her whole taunting of, "Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?" and proved why we are. Community notes on Twitter said funding for this came from the Inflation Reduction Act Bill R-5376. That Elise Stefanik voted nay along party lines with every other Republican. So, Elise Stefanik, the question is, are you a better liar now than you were 4 years ago? I want to also touch briefly on this story about the judge overseeing the Georgia 2020 election interference case. If you're a liberal reading the headlines, you might be thinking something really bad happened today. Politico had huge headlines, "Another good day in court for Trump." And the article says, "This ruling is a major blow for D.A. Fannie Willis." I want to talk about TikTok. Can I just briefly get you off the ledge on this for a second? Yes, the judge did dismiss some of the charges against the former host of Celebrity Apprentice, Donald Trump. But most of the counts in this racketeering indictment are still solid. Now, the six charges in question have to do with soliciting elected officials to violate their oaths of office. That includes the two charges related to Donald Trump's phone call to Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, where he said, "All I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have." Remember that call? Now, you might say to yourself, hey, self, calling the Secretary of State and asking him to find you some votes because you just lost, that's not soliciting? Calm down. Have some dip. The ruling affects 3 of the 13 felony counts Donald is facing, not the main charge of racketeering conspiracy to overturn the results of the 2020 election in the beautiful state of Georgia. These are lower charges that are not relevant to the RICO charges, and you shouldn't be up in arms about this. It's kind of normal. If the prosecutor doesn't have enough evidence, then the judge is right to toss the charges. And it's more important to convict him of the remaining charges. But again, these charges, Republicans are saying, oh, it was politicized, that's why he threw it out. No, these are not charges Fani Willis asked for from a grand jury. The grand jury themselves added these charges. The core of the case against Trump remains intact. Even if Fani Willis were to be removed somehow, the case would still stand. Nothing in all these motions to remove her because of her personal life or in any evidence exonerates any of the defendants. And only 3 charges are dismissed. Okay, the RICO charge is still in effect, which means if convicted, it's jail. Judge McAfee dropping these charges now gives Fani Willis the opportunity to clean the wording up and then refile them. Or would you rather have the judge toss them out during the trial against Comey over Caligula? Because that's what would have happened. In essence, this judge has done Fani Willis a favor by letting her know, if you want to prosecute on these charges, you got a couple of months, tighten it up, make it stronger. The judge said these charges are a little incomplete, could face problems in appeal. Rewrite them and submit them. Sure sounds like he's going ahead with the trial to me. Just refile the charges. 3 charges, my friends, dropped out of 91. I went to public school. I'm not that good at math, but it still sounds like 91 minus 3. 88 criminal charges remaining. Go ahead and celebrate, MAGA. Only 88 charges, which means essentially Trump is now looking at 120 years instead of 150 years. Yeah. Real good day for him, wasn't it? All right. Let's talk about the TikTok business while we can. Last Thursday, as you know, on a bipartisan basis, the House Energy and Commerce Committee unanimously advanced this bill that would force TikTok to be sold by its Chinese parent company, which is called ByteDance. And if they won't, it'll get dropped from all the app stores in like 5 months. Now, TikTok is used by over 170 million Americans, including many teens and young adults. Teens and young adults who have no reason to vote for Donald Trump. And over the past few days, congressional offices were overwhelmed with calls because the app sent a pop-up message the other day to users urging them to tell their representatives to oppose the bill. So what happened today? The House passed a bill that could ban TikTok. Passed with 352 votes. It needed a two-thirds majority to go to the Senate. 65 members voted against it. 1 voted present. And it still needs to clear the Senate. We'll get to that in a second. But Joe Biden said last week, he'll sign this into law if it passes. Now, the people who are pushing this legislation argue that this immensely popular app poses national security risks. And I won't deny it's Chinese malware. TikTok's parent company ByteDance is based in Beijing, and it could expose American user data to Chinese government surveillance. But help me out, friends. If the real problem here is that the algorithm manipulates people and is a threat to Americans, or the algorithm is a manipulative threat to young people, it's not just TikTok, right? Here's Deputy White House Press Secretary Olivia Dalton telling reporters in the pool the administration is pleased with the passage of the House bill that'll force TikTok into new ownership or ban it here in the states. A4.
Well, look, we're glad to see this bill move forward. And I think, from the outset, our goal here has been to address a threat posed by certain technologies that are operating in the United States and put Americans' personal information at risk and present perhaps a broader national security threat. And so, you know, you described it accurately. This is not a ban on TikTok. This is a divestment and a bill that would do more to ensure that ownership of these apps wouldn't be in the hands of people who can exploit them to do Americans harm.
Okay, sounds great. But let me walk you through this, and you can walk me through this, too, because I'm still figuring this out. I know I'm a horrible talk radio host. I don't pretend to have all the answers all the time, but I do have questions. Okay, Congress is, for the first time, openly regarding a social media platform as a tool of propaganda. And they're putting it to a lot of scrutiny, and they're going to legislate because they think the social media platform could be a propaganda tool. Of course, this one is owned by the Chinese. And we know Beijing censors content it wants censored, and they promote a lot of content we don't want young people to see. You know, like every other social media platform that was not being scrutinized today. The Russians used Facebook and Instagram to help Trump win in 2016 and 2020. How come Congress isn't scrutinizing that? Donald Trump, who once tried to ban TikTok because of the data security concerns, now he opposes the bill. Now he's pro-TikTok. You know why? Because the billionaire Jeff Yass has a large stake in ByteDance and he lobbied him against it, meaning President donor-driven flip-flop got a bribe to switch his position. But Joe Biden, who reversed Donald Trump's TikTok ban, is now supporting this movement to ban TikTok again. But Joe Biden's campaign just joined TikTok last month. But Joe Biden banned TikTok for federal workers last year. And again, not for nothing, this president does kind of sort of need young people really bad. The stakes are very high for Oracle, one of the 30 biggest companies in the world, and they host TikTok's U.S. data. They guarantee its safety. Their role in TikTok is worth $1 billion. Now, John Fetterman said, let me be very clear. This legislation to restrict TikTok does not ban the app. It separates ties to the Chinese Communist Party and prevents them from accessing the data of Americans, especially our kids. And that's great. I'm outraged that these Chinese tech oligarchs are using TikTok to get our personal data, like the American and Saudi tech oligarchs collect our personal data. And this bill had bipartisan support from Mike Johnson to Nancy Pelosi. Here she is in support of this legislation, A5.
Just people yesterday on the steps, we heard from the Taiwan people, we heard from the Tibetans, we heard from the Hong Kong, and we heard from a woman whose husband was arrested because of his communication with somebody with a shared view. So this is controlled by the Chinese Communist government. But forgetting that, if you can, I can't, think of this.
Ladies, time has expired.
The Chinese government will control the algorithm. They can change it any time.
Does the gentleman from New Jersey wish to allocate more time?
I urge a yes vote.
Now, again, I'm not saying TikTok's algorithm is innocent by any means. We've talked a lot in the past about how it's designed to make young girls see videos about how you need to lose more weight and cutting. And it's there's a lot of monstrous things the algorithm can do. But it's interesting that the opposition to it was bipartisan as well. I mean, AOC and Marjorie Taylor Greene both oppose this. House Intelligence Committee Vice Chair Jim Himes, Democrat from Connecticut, and Nancy Mace oppose this. Thomas Massey, he said they've described, I mean, he's right-wing Kentucky. He said they've described the TikTok application as a Trojan horse. But there are some of us who feel that either intentionally or unintentionally, the legislation to ban TikTok is actually a Trojan horse. Some of us are concerned there's First Amendment implications here. And Maxwell Frost, the first Gen Z Democrat in Congress, he wrote, there are First Amendment issues I see with taking away a platform that over 170 million Americans use, and this won't fix the serious issues we have with data privacy. You know, what worries me is that it is a Trojan horse, but it's one that Republicans are pushing because they know Joe Biden still hangs on to an edge with young voters. He risks losing them over support for Israel. And he might lose a lot more if he banned their TikTok. Remember last year when TikTok's CEO, Zhao Zichu, was testifying before Congress and Tom Cotton was harassing him, and he begged lawmakers. He said all U.S. user data was routed to servers in Texas. The bottom line is, he said, American data stored on American soil by an American company overseen by American personnel. Now, again, I'm not 100% certain how I feel about this either way, and I welcome your calls about it. I'm not here to defend TikTok, but I do invite you to follow me at John Fugelsang on TikTok. I've just begun posting videos a few months ago, really building up my following. What you need to know is this. This bill is not going anywhere in the Senate. A lot of senators are very cagey about this, and Chuck Schumer has not even declined, not even agreed to have a floor vote. But I have questions. Is the threat posed by TikTok, and I'm not saying there's not a threat, but is it greater to us than the threat posed by Facebook policies during the last two elections that let Russia pay for nonstop Trump propaganda? I mean, we're talking about a popular social media platform might be banned because its parent company has ties to an adversarial foreign government, while at the same time, Meta, a U.S.-owned and operated social media platform, was used by an adversarial foreign government to promote a multifaceted career criminal who promises to be a dictator on day one if he can weasel his way back into office and try to steal a presidential election. I mean, is the foreign social media company really a bigger threat than the domestic one that sells its space to a foreign government? Is it more dangerous than the Nazi chat room Twitter's been turned into? My God, Twitter's a cesspool where every other comment is now pussy in bio. That's not a risk, but TikTok is? I mean, the House passed a bill. They said to protect us from the threat posed by TikTok. They're not willing to pass a bill defending us from the very real threat posed by Vladimir Putin and his control. Well, you know. I mean, they're banning TikTok as a matter of national security, but we can't do anything about the plotters of a terrorist attack on our capital. We can't do anything about mishandling top secret documents. I'm sorry. I mean, call me crazy, but maybe instead of targeting one company, maybe, just maybe, Congress could think about enacting, oh, I don't know, a comprehensive law about data privacy. I mean, how about we keep TikTok and then come up with a data protection and privacy bill where no personal data information from any company can ever be shared without consent of the user. Is that crazy? I mean, why just go after this one owned by a foreign adversary when others heavily used by foreign adversaries? My God, the Russian bots, they start tweeting on Twitter before we wake up because that's when they're awake. And by the way, can I also say, if Congress is trying to ban TikTok to keep our kids safe, boy, howdy, way to lay here about what guns can do. Really, Congress, you're going to ban TikTok before you ban civilian access to AR-15s. We want to know what you guys think. We're at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. Let me get one call before the break. Marie is on the line from Atlanta. Marie, you may approach the bench counselor. What do you think of the TikTok business?
Well, I think the problem with the focus on TikTok is that it focuses on who owns the parent, who the parent company is, and who the ownership mm-hmm. of the parent company is.
Sure.
But TikTok is only really a smaller part of the problem. If people understood that they, by using social media platforms, irrespective of whether they are Facebook, and you've accurately laid out the problems with Facebook and Russian bots, et cetera, but irrespective of it's Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, the bigger problem, is that people who upload data into this, particularly personal data,
yeah,
are actually providing the material that will then feed into AI systems, which will mm-hmm. allow the creation of, for example, a video that looks like your 13-year-old engaging in very adult behavior mm-hmm. that may go out to, you know, whoever her followers are, or things along that of that nature.
Yeah.
So in all candor,
but is that unique to TikTok? My question is that unique to TikTok?
It's not. And what I'd rather see Congress spend its time on is establishing a national policy, just like the EU is doing.
We agree.
Regarding personal data and control and governance of AI systems, so that
yep.
personal data is not at risk.
We agree completely on this, Marie. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if we're going to stop letting foreigners manipulate algorithms, what's going to happen to Twitter and Facebook? Jesus.
Well, and I mean, the fact that the ownership of TikTok has a foreign basis. Okay, so what if they do transition the ownership to a domestic entity, some American-owned entity? Is there any reason to believe that the American-owned entity will not allow foreign contributors to upload and use their platform?
Uh-huh.
So how
yeah.
does it differ? Especially if, again, that material can feed into an AI system that's being owned or deployed by a foreign entity.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, if we want to get serious about this foreign entity and their ownership of things in America, I'm really happy to have that conversation. I'd also really like to have Congress have a conversation about why everything we buy has to be made over there and why everyone from Walmart to Donald Trump has outsourced their manufacturing to this evil company to avoid paying a living wage to American workers. I mean, like, they want to crack down on TikTok, but on China, but only in these very marginalized ways. Well, our economy was much more hurt by the job creator class outsourcing our labor and manufacturing over to these so-called bad guys. It's like they want to save their money where they can, and they want to shake a stick at a bad guy where they can, and they're doing it at the same time to the same villain.
They're shaking twigs, not even sticks.
Amen. Marie, you're the best. Thank you so very much for your call. If you're on hold, please stay there. I want to know what you think. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, your phone calls and the great Bob Seska right here on SiriusXM. We're at 866-997-4748. This is Progress.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
That's right, Elise Stefanik. Are you a better liar now than you were 4 years ago? We are back, and just in time, so's Bob Seska, host of The Bob Seska Show, one of the best podcasts about politics and music you can hope to listen to. He also hosts Trek Politics with Mary Trump, and he's a regular voice here at The Stephanie Miller Show. Catch Bob's bonus material at his Patreon, patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. Mr. Seska, welcome back. What a week already.
Yeah, it seems like we've lived a lifetime in the past just few days. It's an incredible thing. I mean, I was remembering something that Donald Trump said. I think that Russia-Saudi Arabia glitch that he did feels like it was just like a thousand years ago, but it was actually just, I don't know, what was it, a week ago, something like that? Still entertaining. So,
can I tell you, Bob, on Friday, Donald Trump had to post the $92 million bond. And he had Viktor Orban over for another dictator kiss fest at his retirement home. On Saturday, he mocked a stutter. On Sunday, yep, Orban said that Trump promised that he would not give a single penny in aid and let Russia eat Ukraine up. On Monday, Trump promised to free the wrongfully imprisoned, his words, January 6th terrorists. And on Tuesday, just yesterday, we heard that Trump had privately praised Adolf Hitler for doing good things, according to John Kelly. It's only Wednesday, Mr. Seska.
I can't even imagine what we're all going to look like by November.
The polls tell us this kind of behavior is really popular, so get ready for more.
Well, and apparently Alex Jones is offering to go around and eat leftist ass. So, I mean, there's that. I don't know if you saw that, but he posted on Twitter
that he wants to
eat leftist ass is what he posted. So everyone's having a good time with that, John.
You can tell him I said not on your best day. All right.
Just time for South by Southwest.
I mean, he's got to pay his legal debt somehow. I mean, a guy's got to eat.
I guess, but I don't know any leftists. I don't know any leftists who hate themselves enough to give him the pleasure. You know what I'm saying?
Well, maybe InfoWars will get its own category on Pornhub. So there's a possibility for Alex Jones to pick up some extra money.
Well,
extra grift.
We have, however, Mr. Seska, seen some unexpected signs of bipartisanship in the last couple of days. Of course, today, a lot of Democrats and Republicans voted for this TikTok bill. A bunch of Democrats and Republicans voted against it. But yesterday, we got to see Democrats and Republicans all collectively hating Robert Herr in front of cameras, but for very different reasons.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was a shit show yesterday, wasn't it?
Yes, I mean, it was.
This is the Republican Party walking into its own propeller. They thought, aha, we'll bring Robert Herr in here and we'll show Joe Biden a thing or two about being an old man in the White House. And of course, as soon as, you know, as soon as this was announced, I think, or as soon as maybe like an hour before the hearings actually started, the transcript dropped. So
yes,
we were all pouring through the transcript to discover, oh, my God, Robert Herr lied in this report.
He lied.
And I got to think about. Right. I got to think about Merrick Garland, because certainly the attorney general read this report before it was made public.
That's what I'm thinking
about. And ostensibly approved it. Yeah. Despite the fact that it was loaded with all of that color. Color is opinion in journalism talk. And
okay.
So that's
I would actually say it's lies in this case. Lies in this case. But go on, please.
You know, yeah. Well, he was expressing opinions about Joe Biden's condition, and it turned out to be unproven by the actual testimony itself, by the transcript itself. One of the most revealing things about it was that at one point, Robert Herr wanted to take a break in the Q&A with Joe Biden. And Joe Biden's like, no, we're going to keep going. I want to get this done. So 51-year-old Robert Herr was ready for a break, but 81-year-old Joe Biden was ready to keep powering forward. Mm-hmm. With the questioning. So I thought that was quite revealing, and one of many things from the transcript and from the testimony. I mean, one of the great things about the hearing was having Robert Herr read some of the passages from the transcript. That was especially entertaining.
That's right.
And he didn't want to, but I think he's embarrassed by it.
I think he is too.
Yeah. I mean, and then I guess
it's strange that he quit the DOJ right before this. Like, I still am baffled by that choice. And he was getting it from Democrats because he lied. I mean, he was getting it from Republicans because they didn't get the magic bullet here that they wanted to get that would put Joe Biden away. My favorite point was where Scott Fitzgerald read the dictionary definition of senility. Mm-hmm. and Herr denied that President Biden is senile. And said that conclusion did not appear in my report. Like, Republicans were furious at this guy because he was blowing up all their narratives.
Yes, of course he was. Of course he was. And so I was wondering the same thing you were talking about, like how we got to this point with the report and whether Merrick Garland asked Robert Herr to resign right before the hearings started.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's the case, because what you don't want to do, especially in election year, is to fire the guy who was investigating the president. That gets into sort of Watergate territory. So I wonder if there was something that was quietly going on behind the scenes. Like, okay, you know, maybe Merrick Garland recognizing how unethical the report was and saying, hey, you know what? This is not good. You got to tender your resignation. This is immensely unprofessional and unethical of you to do this. And so maybe that was the case. But again, I go back to the fact that, I mean, I don't know for certain, but Merrick Garland had to have approved the report before it went out. So why he would wait until just before Robert Herr testifies to ask him to tender his resignation, that's beyond me. So, I mean,
Merrick Garland is playing three-dimensional chess, Bob. Guys like you and me can't get it. He's kneecapping the man who gave him the job while simultaneously making himself look really, really bad. So it's more shrewd than you and I can comprehend.
Yeah. And I think on the upside, as far as Merrick Garland goes, I think Garland's going to be done at the beginning of a, you know, knock on wood, a second Joe Biden term.
I think so, too.
I think that's going to be one of those things where Joe Biden's a traditionalist. He's an institutionalist. So he's probably going to go to his cabinet on day one after the inauguration and say, OK, everybody tender your resignations and I'll decide which ones I'm going to accept and which ones I'm going to reject. Because that's standard operating procedure going into a second term. So usually there's a house clearing that happens among the cabinet, and that would include the attorney general. So maybe that's going to happen, and it probably should. I think at this point we understand that I think Merrick Garland's dithering put us way too close to the election. I mean, obviously, there was a lot of things to prosecute. I mean, when you start with all the insurrectionists, and that's your beginning exactly. point, we're talking about, what, 1,000, 1,200, 1,300 insurrectionists working their way through the justice system, through the Department of Justice? And,
I don't call it dithering, Bob. I don't, I'm like, dither what? Dither, please. No, not dithering. I do think that Jerry Nadler might have won the day. I mean, Raskin had some good moments. Swalwell played this. Swalwell got to play this whole tape of Trump mangling words on Fox News for 60 seconds straight. But Nadler got Robert Hur to admit that Trump's behaviors were crimes. He said, you agree that causing someone to lie to the FBI is a classic example of obstruction of justice? And Hur agreed. So I don't really know if anybody won yesterday, but I don't think it was a good day for Trump.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't a good day for Robert Hur either. Although I do think that Robert Hur is auditioning to be Trump's attorney general.
Not
I wouldn't
anymore,
be surprised if that. Well, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, it's entirely possible.
He's not going to Hollywood, dog.
Yeah, although I think Elena Haba will end up being the attorney general.
Please.
In exchange for, in lieu of pay, in lieu of legal fees, he'll say, you know what? Forget, I'm not going to pay you, but I'll make you attorney general. How about that? You like that trade? And she'll, of course, go for it, naturally.
This is your way of saying me that you don't think it's going to be Rudy Giuliani? This is your way of saying you don't think?
No, I
you
don't
heard about
think
tonight's
the
rumor?
General's going to be Rudy.
Have you heard about tonight's rumor?
Yes, I did. And I'm wondering if that was just a satire Twitter account or not, because if there is a Rudy Giuliani sex tape, Jesus God, that's good what you're God. Talking about, right? There's not another Rudy thing happening. Okay, gotcha.
I mean, this could end porn usage in this country. Think about the power morally of this. This could put Pornhub out of business if there is a Giuliani sex tape. He has fallen so far since Borat 2, Bob. You know how it is. It's really sad.
Well, there's one useful thing about a Rudy Giuliani sex tape, something else we can use in our minds to hold back our orgasms. So, I mean, in addition to baseball, we can just imagine Rudy Giuliani having sex after watching.
Yeah, that ends a date quick. Bob, let me ask you about the vote today on the potential TikTok ban or sale bill. I opened with a rant about it and how, I'm not defending TikTok or their algorithm, but we're going to do this against one platform. I mean, one platform because it's owned by an adversarial foreign country, but we'll let adversarial foreign countries run roughshod over Twitter and Facebook and invade our country's brains in other ways. What's your take on this bill that was passed today? Strong bipartisan support and strong bipartisan opposition. AOC and Marjorie Taylor Greene voted against this.
I'll start with a general statement about social media, because I think you're absolutely right. I think there are other platforms that deserve some form of sanctions here. Social media, I think, is a net negative. I think social media is a failed experiment. I think there are lots of positive things that have come out of social media. Certainly, I've enjoyed my time on social media to a certain extent. I don't think that I think the negatives outweigh the positives, though. And one of the things that we don't know yet, because it is a matter of national security, is I don't think we have a full understanding of exactly how hostile foreign governments are using our information against us. And we got a taste of it in 2016 with Facebook and Twitter and Russia using the Facebook platform to buy reach for its disinformation to help Donald Trump win an election. Mm-hmm. And that happened, obviously, on Twitter as well. And I'm afraid that we're going to run into the same issue again with TikTok this year. That's my concern. And it's for a couple of reasons. I mean, I think primary reason is obviously because ByteDance has to turn over user data to the Chinese government on a regular basis. My concern beyond that is what you were saying at the top, is the algorithm itself. I think the algorithms that are used by the social media platforms are inherently damaging to discourse. I think it's inherently damaging to the dissemination of factual information. I think the algorithm encourages people to behave in a way that is acceptable to the algorithm, but not to themselves or to society. I think the obligation when you're playing along with social media, at least if you want to have any sort of attention whatsoever for the things that you're posting, is the idea is that you're feeding the algorithm rather than feeding what's important or what's interesting or entertaining.
I agree, but that brings it back to my point. Why is the Chinese government more dangerous to teenage girls than Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk?
Oh, it's not. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg took rubles from the Russian troll farms and the GRU, which is the military intelligence agency in Russia. And so Zuckerberg is as guilty, if not more guilty, than anyone else in the social media realm. Certainly as bad as TikTok. And if I had my druthers after the 2016 election, I would have shut down Facebook as a consequence of all of that.
Really?
I mean, Russia didn't change any votes on election day. Certainly not, or at least there's no evidence along those lines. But what Russia did was more insidious. Russia used
Blacks for Hillary was a Russian front. Like, I mean, there were so many Facebook pages that were just done by Russia that were just propaganda. But I mean, who exactly would be the president who would shut down a private corporation like that? And you know, I think ultimately Biden's not going to sign this. He said he would. I think he's going to flip-flop just like Trump did, because he's already got his issues with young voters and he's not about to take away people's favorite toy.
Oh, yeah. I think Joe Biden's going to stick this one in a drawer. I don't think Joe Biden.
I think Chuck Schumer's going to stick it in a drawer for Biden.
That could be, too, because I don't think it's going to pass the Senate. But if it does, I think Joe Biden sticks it in a drawer at least until the next Congress, and then maybe it'll get reintroduced. But my thing is, I don't necessarily believe that TikTok or, you know, despite what I just said about Facebook, it was just a reaction out of anger. But I don't think any of the platforms should be banned, though I do think TikTok needs to be sanctioned. I think TikTok needs to be regulated like any other corporation, and so that it's not using our information against us, so that the Chinese government can better understand what voters want or what presses our buttons, and so therefore how best to manipulate us. And that's the thing that I think we miss in all the social media platforms. It's rampant manipulation. We are, as we use social media, whether it's Elon Musk's Twitter or it's Facebook or any other Instagram, TikTok, it's all a gigantic manipulation. We are being manipulated into, as I said, feeding the algorithm.
Yes.
And so, and the danger.
Because
it's
fun. Because it's fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's fun. And what happens is when the manipulation starts to come from not just a corporation looking to maximize its profit margins, but when it comes from a semi or entirely hostile foreign government, when those governments are exploiting that information and the use of the algorithm. And the other insidious thing about the social media platforms, which we're kind of burying the lead on this, they're all data mining operations. Let's make no mistake. This is not about posting your cat videos and pictures of your food. This is about mining your data. I mean, it's astonishing. I remember covering the NSA story back in 2013. I was like, hey, look, if you're concerned about the NSA, take a look at some of these social media platforms and websites you visit every day. They're collecting far more information and unaccountable information than the NSA and the IRS and the CIA and all these other agencies combined. And they're able to do it with impunity. In fact, we're willingly handing it over to them. There's great irony in that.
Do we know what foreign entities loaned Elmo his $44 billion to buy Twitter and turn it into Pussy and Bioville? I mean, do we know? Before he turned it into a Nazi chat room, how many of those dollars were Saudi? I mean, we don't. Yeah.
I think there's a certain amount of Saudi money that went into Elon Musk's investment, which is why if I were Elon Musk and watching the value of Twitter collapse, I'd be looking over my shoulder. I mean, I'd be thinking about, you know, Jamal Khashoggi. You know what I mean? I'd be thinking along those lines if I were Elon Musk, because he's losing a lot of important people a lot of money with this ridiculous, frivolous investment of his. Yeah.
Yeah, let it burn.
This is the second week in a row you've shushed me about this. And yeah.
Oh, no, let it. Laura Trump running the RNC, but she's going to loot their coffers to pay Trump's legal.
Yeah, I know.
Sun Tzu told us to keep it quiet. Let your enemy self-destruct. We have a lot of listeners who want to weigh in on this, Bob. Do you want to talk to some of our evil army of the night?
Absolutely.
Let me go to Mike in Michigan. Mike, thanks for waiting on hold. You're on with Bob Seska. Tell me everything about TikTok.
Yeah, well, just TikTok, you know, I just want to mention XM Radio, okay?
Yeah.
XM Radio, great. You know, when they changed their format in December, okay, on my phone, at first I was upset, and now I'm pretty happy with it because I actually complained to XM because I couldn't back up like 15 seconds when I back up, you get that backup button, you know?
Wow. And, okay. It was, did it make it you was, suicidal like a girl on TikTok who's a teenager?
No. But went back, it would go back like 5 minutes, you know? And if you said something really wild, I wanted to listen to it. So what did he just say? And I go back 15 seconds. Well, they restored that. I think because enough people complained, I guess. But
okay,
God, XM Radio is a good outfit, you know.
They listen to their subscribers. They're a fine organization.
That's true. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Couldn't do that if China owned it.
No, China would make it even harder to rewind 15 seconds, and then where would you
That's
be?
That's right.
Yeah, nine and a half seconds like, top.
TikTok is crazy, but you mentioned Attorney General. I like Sheldon Whitehouse for Attorney General. I think he'd make a good one.
Sure. Me too. I mean,
yeah, lots absolutely. Of possibilities. Yeah.
I like anyone named Sheldon more than Robert Barr. Thank you so much for the call, Mike. I appreciate hearing from you. Let me go to Lindsay in Oregon, also calling about TikTok. Lindsay, welcome. You're on SiriusXM with Bob Sesker and me.
Hi. I was calling because I use TikTok quite a bit. I'm not a kid. And I think that a lot of times when I hear people talking about the app, you hear like teenage girls and,
yeah,
you know, kids and stuff. I'm 41 years old, and I just kind of just, you know, downloaded it because I heard about it and was like, what is this app? And it will pull up, you know, we talk about the algorithm. It'll pull up stuff that you're interested in. And so I don't, you know, you see a lot of people talking about how it's dance videos and stuff. And for me, it's been videos about politics. I'm
me
a mental
too.
Health worker, videos about mental health.
Me too.
You know, I'm a Christian as well. I know that you are. And a lot of videos about progressive Christianity or people that are deconstructing and that process. And there's a lot of community on there. And I think that... I think that's part of the fear, maybe, is what I, you know, I know all social media has a sense of community, but there's something about TikTok where it just seems like there's an ability to organize and a lot of like free thinking kind of stuff happening on there that is not really being talked about. That I do wonder, with this being political, you know, so much political weight behind it, if there is kind of a concern that if, you know, these communities start organizing, you know, it could sway things, and not necessarily in a negative way for the voter, but for politicians. And I think a lot of stuff gets exposed on there, you know, with a lot of people talking about stuff that's happening in their states or with their politicians or things that you don't hear on the news, but that is very much real and true.
I mean, I wonder how much of this controversy and kerfuffle is just election year propaganda by people. But Bob, what do you think?
I am deeply concerned that I saw a recent poll indicating that about 30% of people aged 18 to 29 are getting their information from TikTok. And while the mainstream news media is no great shakes, getting your information from TikTok, I think, leaves you susceptible to disinformation. And especially in an election year, I get concerned that, you know, we're being fed disinformation by the social media platforms, including TikTok, including all the others, that the algorithm is pumping that into our heads and convincing us to make choices that we wouldn't otherwise make. So that is a great concern. I think maybe part of the problem with the disconnect between the status of the economy and what people think is going on with the economy might be fueled by social media disinformation. I mean, that's entirely a possibility there too. So, I noticed too, when I signed up for TikTok. In fact, I posted about, a dozen videos or so on TikTok and was able to build up a decent sized following there. But I remember when I downloaded the app, there was like a whole Get Smart series of doors that I had to get through, where every single pop-up that came up was another blind alley that would have taken me to an area where suddenly I'm giving up all of my contacts to TikTok. It was a lot of possibilities for invasion of privacy right off the start. And that doesn't even take into consideration the data mining. and where that data mining is being distributed to as far as a semi-hostile foreign government in the Chinese regime. So these are all pitfalls that I think are quite dangerous and I think evidence at anyone who's been using TikTok.
Yeah. Lindsay, thank you so much for calling. I found a lot of great progressive Christian people, and I follow a lot of comedians and, you know, rock and roll stuff and all kinds of stuff that I'm a nerd for.
I found a lot of political stuff that actually isn't, you know, negative information, but it's actually been stuff I hear on here, you know, that you wouldn't really hear if you didn't have Progress Radio, you know. And so that's where I'm, you know, well, I guess I'm thinking the benefits of it. But like, I know a lot of people have gained a lot of really positive information off of it.
That's the thing. Like, Bob, Lindsay makes a great point. I can sit here and talk about how awful Facebook is and Zuckerberg and Musk and how terrible they've made these platforms. But at the same time, for most of us, the positives tend to outweigh the negatives, especially those of us in entertainment or broadcasting who have to use the platforms to get a message out.
Oh, yeah. And that includes, I think, both of us. I think we both do that.
Comedians couldn't survive without it. Comics couldn't survive without it.
Yeah, where we're spending our entire day copying and pasting everything from social media platform to social media platform, just across all of them. And that's the lion's share of the hours that we spend during the day. But yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, there are many, as I said, there are many positive things. I have made lifelong friends and made lifelong relationships on social media.
Exactly right.
I'm with Kimberly because we met on social media. So it's,
that I didn't know. Can we talk about that next time? Because that's an origin story.
Sure.
Bob, we're out of time already. I'm so sorry, but this topic is so fascinating. Thank you. I feel smarter. How do we follow you, Seska?
You can follow my podcast anywhere you get your podcast. Just search for The Bob Seska Show, and also on Patreon, BobSeskaShow.com.
You're the best, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
You bet.
We'll be right back with your calls in just a moment here on SiriusXM 866-997-GRIT.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. We're at 866-997-4748, 866-997-GRIT. Let's get back to the calls before the God Squad shows up. Armando is on the line from Rhode Island. Armando, thank you so much for waiting on hold. You're on Progress. Good evening.
Hi, John. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Love your show. Thank you so much for doing it.
Hello, sir. Thank you so much for calling.
Hey, one quick thing about TikTok.
Yes.
I just wanted to bring up the fact that, like, Meta is probably the ones that are going to buy it, right? They want to keep it in-country, so they're going to exclude this Chinese company to bring in this American company who has paid a fine for taking people's data from Europe and selling it to the United States. So
that's
are
right.
we just going to exclude the fact that we're taking, you know, yes, our data is going to be sold no matter what, that you kind of buy into that whenever you get the application, right? But, like, I get that they're saying that, okay, we can't sell it to the Chinese, but instead we can sell it to people closer to us who can
exactly.
use it more diligently to affect us. Like,
yeah, exactly. I don't understand this. I really don't. I don't understand why they're a greater threat to our privacy than the homegrown douchebags. And you're exactly right. They're going to probably pass this thing around until it's watered down just enough that someone else can claim ownership. But I mean, it's a Chinese property. China's not going to give it up. And our government is not going to do it. It would be like, I'm sorry, but it would be like getting rid of Social Security. It'd be like getting rid of Medicare. You know, Ron Paul loved to campaign saying, I'll get rid of those things. No president's going to get rid of Medicare, and no president's going to get rid of TikTok. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, and John, I actually found you on TikTok, right?
Oh!
So, yeah, absolutely. I'm not even lying. I'm not even kidding. Like, I found you through TikTok, and I found several progressives. I was more centralist until I started going down the rabbit hole of how little it makes sense to not treat everyone the same and not give everyone a leg up. So that's why I'm exceptionally passionate about it, is that, like, it's just taking away avenues for me to find more information. And
right.
That is exactly, and you said it, John, like you have said it before, keep us stupid and keep us angry. And that's exactly what it seems like.
I mean, it does, but, you know, and I'll acknowledge that there's lots of good that comes out of TikTok, but at the same time, yes, I mean, it's right there. Like, we've had so many people on the show who've discussed studies that show that young girls get shown really fucked up stuff. It's all weight loss. It's all cutting. I mean, and we've also seen how people can be manipulated. Yes, it's no doubt it's dangerous for your kids to be on TikTok. It's also dangerous for your kids to go out and hang out at the mall. I mean, anyone who's out there looking to exploit a minor is going to have a shot. But to me, the whole issue is, why don't we have comprehensive legislation aimed at all social media platforms? Why can't we have something that's a data privacy and protection bill where no personal data from any company can be shared without the user consenting to it? I mean, we need comprehensive data privacy legislation for across the internet, not just for this one platform they've all decided to beat up on this year. And that's not saying that TikTok's algorithm does not have evil elements to it. The Chinese are not. I'm not saying the Chinese government are great people. Nothing like that. It's just really selective outrage.
And I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. I I'm going to make one more point and then I'll let you go. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really
thank you. Call
it.
More often. It's a pleasure to have you.
I would say that the rise of misinformation started with Facebook, and then we could all agree that, like, social media as a whole is horrible for the youth, right? Then again, the Chinese make chips on our – I mean, there was a Senate hearing today that was like, oh, you know, the Chinese make chips on our car. The Chinese make chips on our computers. Like, why are we specifically – the Chinese make chips in the iPhone that I'm calling you from right now.
Exactly. Exactly. Our outrage is so selective.
But also, I would go to prove, and I don't know, I was in the Navy at the time, so it's, like, hard for me to really say because I was going out to sea a lot, but, like, I think misinformation started way before TikTok, because I remember people on my boat talking about flat Earth, like, 10 years ago, and that's from YouTube, which is now owned by Meta, you know?
Yep. I know, and by the way, we had someone on the show who wrote a whole book about the flat earthers, and that's fascinating, because the whole deal with the Flat Earth Society is, that's where the Nazis and the right wing, you know, Christian nationalists, they're just the creepiest fascists we have. They go to these events where the flat earthers show up, and they flat earth society shit is used to recruit people who are easily swayed and looking for community. And that's how they do it. That's the real purpose of flat earth society movements, is to get people who are suckers to draw them into other schemes and conspiracy theories.
Yes, sir.
White supremacists love that. Thank you so much. What a pleasure. Let me go really quick to Michael in San Diego on line 5. Hi, Michael. You're on Sirius XM. Thanks for waiting. Do we have Michael in San Diego?
Unmute.
Mike, unmute. We want to hear you. We're here for you. Oh, this happened and it's so weird. Hi, Michael. I heard something. Michael in San Diego, are you... This is the awkward part. Stephanie Miller would hang up right away.
There's someone there.
There's something there.
Oh my
right?
God.
This is like when is that what it is? That usually happens
you
to Charles
did
in Miami.
It.
Did I put him to sleep already?
You Charles Michael.
No, this is like in Contact when Jodie Foster gets the signal at the SETI facility from outer space. It's a
this means something.
Yeah. That was a good snore, though. That was a masculine snore. Michael. All right.
Yes.
Oh, hi. Yes, is this a bad time?
Hello.
Are you free? Hi, Michael.
Can you hear me?
I sure can. Yes, yeah, you sound perfect now. Yes, I can. Welcome.
Okay, cool. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for all that you do. Real quick, and I actually was introduced to you through TikTok.
Oh, no.
So I'm a fairly new listener.
Right on.
But I work in technology, and I'm a programmer. Actually, I do create apps as well, and I'm actually going to be uploading an app tonight for a client. But I don't really understand the whole I don't understand where they're coming at with the security or personal information concerns. Apps like TikTok or any other app, they don't exist in their own universe. They exist, on the host, which, and it's either Android or Apple. And with TikTok, as with any other app, there are permissions, and so yeah. I have downloaded TikTok, and I don't give it permissions to access my location. I don't give it permissions to access my contacts, et cetera. So If they have concerns as far as security or personal information concerns, they could just simply pass certain rules that TikTok would have to follow. I don't understand the whole idea of forcing them to either be purchased by an American company or to, divest. They're already hosted on American servers in the first place. So
in Texas,
I think this is, So I think this whole issue is really because anytime you have all of this media like, TikTok and the social media, et cetera, it takes away from the traditional media. And I think it's more to do with the fact that, YouTube has taken a major hit since TikTok, and
really?
I would think that Google itself, which owns YouTube, would be more likely the candidate to purchase TikTok, if they were forced to sell. I think that's really
but
what's
what,
going
what
on.
What if the Chinese government doesn't want to sell? What's going to happen if the Chinese government doesn't want to give up this property, doesn't want to sell it?
Exactly. What if they don't want to sell or they want someone? I mean, there could be another type of arrangement, which maybe they are allowed to maintain some type of partial ownership of some sort. But I don't think this has really anything to do with security or people's personal information. I think it's all business and all. And then the other thing is there's a lot of free speech happening on TikTok. There's a huge deconstruction movement with regard to Christianity, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then here in America, one of the largest media companies in the world also owns the Bible, So
what do you mean? The largest media company also owns the Bible? What do you mean?
Rupert Murdoch's organization. He owns Fox. Rupert Murdoch, he also owns Zondervan, and he also owns Thomas Nelson Publishers, the two biggest Bible
publishers. Oh, okay, I see. I see. So but he doesn't actually.
It all goes hand in hand,
And the irony is that Rupert Murdoch probably doesn't own a Bible because God knows he never read one.
Right, he probably doesn't. But I'm saying that these things that happen with deconstruction and anything that is kind of. I think there, like I said, there are other forces, other media forces in the U.S. that are probably pushing this more than anything. I don't think it's a personal user information sort of thing.
Right. Let me ask you one question. Would you support a comprehensive law passed by Congress for data privacy some kind of bill where no personal data from any companies ever can be shared unless the user consents? I mean, my whole issue is why just go after TikTok, especially since there's already so much hostile foreign interference on Facebook and Twitter?
Yeah, and I totally agree with you, John. I think that we already have some of those laws in place. And as I said, they could simply say, Congress doesn't even have to do it. Agencies in America could simply say, we're going to restrict TikTok to only getting the basic account information, account name. And that's all they can, that's all the app would have permission to is the basic name. So, if you have an Android account or an Apple account, that the app can only verify that, your name in order to be installed on your device or whatever it is. So I don't understand the whole act of Congress and the whole thing because there's already a lot of privacy laws in place. And again, I have TikTok. It doesn't have access to my contacts. It doesn't have access to my location. I don't get it.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for the call. I got to go to take our guest, but I do predict this bill will die on the floor of the Senate like Caesar on the Ides of March. Thank you so much. Right now, it is time to welcome back the God Squad. I spend all week waiting for my radio salvation. Keith Giles is a former pastor who left the pulpit to follow Jesus. He's the author of the best-selling Jesus Un book series, Jesus Unarmed, etc., for people who are deconstructing their faith. He's a regular contributor to the Patheos Progressive Christian blog platform and the co-owner of Choir Publishing, and he calls out these fucking fascists like nobody's business. Keith, welcome back.
I'm here to call him out, John. Thanks for having us.
Dylan Cruz is a ferociously brilliant writer and theologian from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. His book, Theological Musings, Volume 1, is highly recommended, a great collection of essays, and he covers political, social, and environmental concerns in the U.S. and around the world, and he's a monster on social media. Dylan Cruz, it's great to see you. Welcome back.
Thanks, John. They're poking the bear.
Ah, and finally, let me welcome Miss America, Pastor December Rose, former pastor of the Restoration Center in Greenville, South Carolina, and the Rock Worship Center in West Union, South Carolina. She's the author of the book, The Church Can Go to Hell, a jaw-dropping memoir and theological dive into the toxic reality of church culture. She's also a dynamite spoken word artist, spreading the gospel of grace through love, truth, and radical hospitality. All three of these people freak out the right Christian nationalist fascist motherfuckers. Welcome to all of you. It's a pleasure to see you.
Thanks, John.
Hey, boo. I look forward to my polyamorous session with you guys every week.
Oh, well, thank you. I didn't even know this was polyamorous. I would have worn too much cologne if I'd known that. Thank you. Yeah. A boy can dream.
We can smell it through the Zoom. Yeah.
Let me start with let's start small and go wide today, because before we jump into how the Republican Party and the Heritage Foundation want to turn our country into a fake Christian hellscape, let's start micro. Keith, you told me about this story, how Houston ticketed 90 different people for feeding the homeless. I'm simple. I went to public school. I don't know much, but it does seem that if you're going to have a government that pretends and boasts of how Christian you are, maybe you should stop executing people, or at the very least, let people feed the homeless. What is this story all about?
Yeah, it is a bit of a, well, it's a bit of a shock, but like most of these stories, I guess differently, is there's a positive spin on this one instead of the stories we've covered before of people getting arrested and things like that. In this case, yes, 90 people have been ticketed. Several of them have been arrested and charged. But the great news is, in spite of the fact there's 90 people charged with this quote unquote crime of feeding the homeless, they can't find a jury of people willing to convict them of a crime.
Oh, I love that.
Outstanding.
It's a beautiful story. Yes. Some positive stories now, you know, we have a city and we have district attorneys and people like this attempting to criminalize caring for the poor and the homeless people, by the way, that they have no plan or intention of caring for right themselves. But they want to demonize the people that are trying to do something. And So I just love this story. I love reading it and finding out that they couldn't find enough people to fill a single jury that were willing to convict anyone for being a good neighbor. It illustrates the fact, I think, there are many politicians right now that are trying to pass these brutal, inhuman laws based on this very strong us-them mentality, and they're out of touch with, at least it seems, there's enough good people out there willing to care for their neighbor, people who want to help people that are suffering. And I think that's great. And again, compassion should never be against the law.
This is such a great Easter story for Lent. I know that, and I love Houston, but like they made the law was passed 10 years ago, 12 years ago. It's illegal to feed more than 5 homeless people at a time without the property owner's permission, including public spaces, and you can be fined $500. I mean, it's unthinkable here in New York, where everyone's trying to give food to homeless people on every subway car and every other corner all the time. And I'm guessing the city hasn't passed any laws to try to fight homelessness, right? To get these poor people off the streets. They just don't want anybody feeding them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And what I saw in the article that I shared with you, it looks like that a judge sort of suspended that that ordinance until they can kind of make sense of it. But hopefully it means they're going to overturn it. That would be wonderful. Wow. But even if they did that, that still wouldn't solve the problem. You still would have a homeless problem. You still would have people that are, you know, need food.
But I like that. Like juries won't convict anybody for it. even if they've clearly broken the law, God bless these juries. They will not convict people.
That's right. That's beautiful. We need more of that.
I mean, Pastor, I want to ask you about the season we're in. I mean, as you well know, we're at the crossroads of three major religious holidays all at once. And I'm wondering if you can share with us some of your thoughts on this particular time we find ourselves in, when so much of the world is at each other's throats more than ever. And when I just believe if these people waging war in the name of God read their holy books, they'd love their enemies. They would try harder to find nonviolent solutions to problems.
Well, the first thing is they're not reading no holy books. That's first thing. Yeah. Who knows what they're reading? Probably propaganda and sucking down Fox News 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But just add a comment concerning the situation with the homeless.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to know why did that law ever originate, not feeding more than five? That seems very interesting. I'm pretty sure it came out of some other kind of some political foolery that didn't have anything to do with serving the people. But I'm reminded of scripture, the poor will always be with you. And in my mind, that's always, you always have a ministry to opportunity to serve. Yes. And I cannot imagine criminalizing ministry, because feeding people is a service. It's a sacrifice.
Can I ask you about that, Pastor?
It's a ministry.
You know, Jesus said the poor will always be with you. It seems like some people say, well, that like you said, it's a call to service. It means the struggle never ends. We've always got to be giving. We're always going to have to be loving and try to uplift the poor. That's what the book says. Mm-hmm. But it seems like a lot of right-wing folks write it off as saying, oh, that the poor is always going to be here. So what's the point? They're always going to be here. Jesus said so. So what's the point of having any legislation to try to help these people when that's just how it is? I mean, it really is sort of a moral Rorschach test.
It is easy to say that when you're not poor. It's easy to say that when you're born, when you get the birth lottery, okay, and you're born into certain situations and circumstances in this country, that either you don't ever have to see poverty or experience it, or you're in a place where you don't have to experience the brunt of it because of whatever privileges that you have and whatever social barriers have not been erected to keep you from it. A lot of poverty is generational for many reasons, or whatever the case. Some of it is medical, some of it is mental. There's a lot going on with the people that are homeless. I ran a homeless program for a number of years, and my heart was just open, and I was just a bleeding heart. And I thought at first, all they need is groceries, all they need is housing. That's all they need. So I started throwing money at these things, and I realized, no, that's some of them. Yeah, that's what they need. But some of them, they have psychological problems. Some of them are chronically homeless.
Yeah.
Some of them, you cannot give them money to pay the bills. You have to pay the bills for them.
Yes.
And for them to function. So there's so many, there's levels to this. There's levels to this, but it doesn't matter what level you're at. We are called to love.
Last year here in New York,
told no man nothing but to love him. We're called to that no matter what the level is.
Last year in New York, we saw a mentally ill homeless man get murdered on a subway train by some guy because he was acting erratically. And the right-wing media called the murderer the Good Samaritan. He was just being a Good Samaritan, looking out for the rest. I was like, no, you evil bitches. A Good Samaritan would walk up to the mentally disturbed homeless man and say, are you okay, brother? Do you need anything? Can I help you? The Good Samaritan doesn't sneak up behind the guy.
This guy, wasn't he going on because he was hungry or something was going on with him?
Yeah, he was freaking out. And if you ride the subways in New York at night, you have seen a mentally ill homeless person freak out and scream. And they usually don't lay a finger on anyone. And the only person who touched anyone on this car was the white dude who murdered the mentally ill homeless guy. But again, the right-wing media just sold it right away as he was the Good Samaritan. Mm-hmm. And I read the Good Samaritan story. He doesn't sneak up behind a guy and kill him. That's not how the narrative goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to say something about that statement about Jesus when he says, you know, the poor you'll always have with you. And you're right, John. Growing up as a Southern Baptist, I always heard it twisted that way and spun that way as, oh, well, see, why bother? Jesus says they're always going to be there. I want to offer, like December said, when I was growing up as a young man, my job was to mow the grass all the time. And the hot summer Texas sun, it was a big deal. And, you know, so for my dad to say to me, you know, son, there will always be grass to mow. He didn't mean to suggest, oh, don't bother. Just let the grass grow. Right. Who cares? You're just gonna have to keep doing it. The point was, no, you're always going to have to do this. And Jesus didn't just say that in a vacuum. Everything else he said and did was about caring for the poor, right? And so we have a mandate from Jesus to do something about it. It's not like, oh yeah, don't bother. Jesus makes a big deal about it, right? I'm going to quote this verse several other times tonight, but Jesus says this, you know, many different ways. He says, if you love me, you'll obey my commandments. You'll obey my teaching. And he says, you know, if you love me, you obey my commands. And anyone who doesn't love me will not obey my teaching. And this is one example of that. But I know the topics we're going to cover coming up, we're going to see that come up over and over again. People saying that they follow Jesus, but they have no interest in actually following anything that he taught.
Exactly. They don't use him as a messiah. They use him as a mascot. He's a prop they wave around to claim they're better. Dylan Cruz, I know you want to jump in on this.
Well, I think December and Keith have both hit the nail on the head. You can't love your neighbor by killing them when they're in a moment of distress. And that dude that did that was a former Marine like me.
Yes, he was.
And it would have been real easy for that jackass to just grab that dude and hold him in place.
Yeah.
And not murder him.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the poor are always going to be with us. And why is that? Because of systems of oppression that powerful people lock into place. Mm-hmm. Poverty is a policy choice. This is not new. This is not new. It goes back into ancient times when somebody decided to lock up the grain and then started creating haves and have nots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got a barn full. You ain't got none. I got an army to protect my barn full. You don't have anybody to get behind your back.
Totally true.
And I got an army to come get your barn full.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I can put it in my barn.
God told me I'm supposed to come get your barn full because my people are God's favorite. So I get to go behind. Rules don't apply to me. And December, you've spoken so beautifully about how, you know, faith is universal. And you know, I always quote The Last Jedi, where Luke Skywalker says, the Jedi don't own the Force. And this has been something that's been a guiding principle for me, that religion doesn't own God, it doesn't own spirituality, it doesn't own faith, and it doesn't own you.
That's right. That's right. And what's interesting is, right now, we're in a season where the religious holy events are converging and crossing in the crossroads and the intersections. We got Lent. Okay. We got Ramadan. We've got Easter Sunday coming up. Passover. All those things.
Mm-hmm.
Passover. All those things crossing. And it's not any coincidence that across all these different faiths and religions, this time is holy to them. That alone should be enough for somebody to say, you know, God is bigger than my church. He's bigger than my religion. He's bigger than my doctrine. He's bigger than my ideology, because it is no coincidence at all that across all these different faiths, they all consider this time particularly holy for whatever reason. You think that's a coincidence? That can't be coincidence. And what somebody who understands how is trying to anyway, understand how awesome and amazing and limitless and infinite God is, will have to be humble enough to understand that just whatever version of him that I believe in is not the only version that there is. Whatever name that I call him cannot be his only name. However I see him in my scriptures cannot be the only way that was written about him in just this book or just this translation. You know, the King James or whatever the case, you know, this God existed before the King James, before the Geneva, before the Ethiopia, before all that. He had to exist for them to write about it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the presence of him and the existence of him, or however you want that energy, that source, you know, that force had to exist before anybody ever wrote about it, before anybody ever gave it a name, before anybody ever gave it a conference, a season, a feast. Okay. Mm-hmm. God is so much bigger than that. So much bigger than that.
This is the part where I have to point out that some of the best Christians I've ever known have been atheists, and some of the most godless heathens I've ever known have been very loud Christians. And also, you know, one thing I've come to really believe, I mean, if God or Allah or Jehovah wanted anybody dead, he'd smite them himself. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need us.
assuming that he wants us to, if he wants to, and I say this to Hamas, yeah. I say this to Netanyahu, I say this to our own Christian nationalists, if the Almighty wanted someone dead, he'd whack him himself. He's very good at it in
the
his book.
Smiter in chief. He is very competent at
he
the
He smites all day.
He can do it.
Yes. That's how he solves problems. That's how we know he's a man. Okay, I have so much. So much I want to talk
to everything that pisses against the wall.
I have so much I want to talk with you guys about. And Dylan, I want to talk with you about the two-spirit people and Christian nationalism as well. Please, fam, stay with us. We're going to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Keith, Dylan, and December right after a quick two-minute break. This is Progress After Dark.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And welcome back. It's Wednesday night with the God Squad, Keith Giles, December Rose, and Dylan Cruz, people who all have black belts in thumping Bible thumpers with the Bible, and taking your calls at 866-997-4748. What I love most about this segment is how it freaks out all the right people. Dylan, we were talking in the break how last week we had a caller weigh in about homophobia and how in indigenous communities in North America, they believe in two-spirit people. Simon and Julie talk about this all the time on Thursdays, but I wanted to know what your thoughts were on this. You've written about this.
Yeah. So I'm a permaculture guy. Permaculturists look for patterns in nature. And one of the things that you will, if you just take a very quick glance at nature, you will find out that diversity is absolutely the norm. But I also want to look at this theologically because Native Americans in the continental United States, two-spirit people, they have revered them for millennia. Yeah. Similarly, in Polynesian culture, the Hawaiians and the Tahitians with the Mahu, that's their version of essentially transgender folks. But rabbinic writings and even the book of Genesis talks about God as embodying four different genders, according to ancient rabbis. So I wrote a rebuttal to a Nashville statement that came out in 2017, the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood with their gender complementarian horseshit. And as I was researching it, you look at Genesis 1:27, and in that creation account, that's the first of two, by the way, it says that God created humankind in God's image. Male and female God created them simultaneously, which then implies that God is both male and female. And these rabbis said, well, wait, God's genitals are hidden. So therefore, God is an indeterminate gender. And then God is also androgynous. So in the Bible, in the original Hebrew, four genders for God. And then in rabbinic writings, they see six genders as valid. So all this gender complementarianism and all this transgender expression is sinful and goes against nature. It's not supported by the book that these folks follow, nor is it supported by the natural world. There are 350,000 species of beetles. Are you telling me that there are only two fucking ways to be human?
I love everything you just said, but also there are creatures in the animal kingdom that can change their gender over the course of their life. One of them, I learned this at the Coney Island Aquarium, is a fish called the slippery dick. The slippery dick can change its gender. You're going to tell me that God doesn't have a sense of humor? The slippery dick, Dylan.
Exactly. Exactly. God loves diversity. And that's one of the things that I take from as being a permaculturist and a theologian. God loves diversity. Human diversity comes. We've got different color eyes. We got different color hair. We got people that are tall like me. And we got people that are short like Spud Webb. You know, we got beautiful people all over the world in every color of the rainbow that is human flesh.
Yes.
And we also have multiple ways of gender expression. And when science might not figure this out ever, but who gives a shit? Jesus didn't say, wait until we scientifically figure stuff out before you love people.
Oh, man.
He just said, love them and treat them as you want to be treated. Trans people That's are asking it. For respect and human dignity.
That's it. That's Matthew 25. Why aren't all the preachers saying this? As you treat the least of these people is how you treat me. As you treat the homeless, as you treat the transgender, as you treat the guy in jail, as you treat the sinner, the fuck up, the loser, the communist is how you treat me.
Exactly.
Exactly.
This is
right.
not hard.
No.
No.
It is really not that fucking difficult.
Yeah. And if you're reading the actual red letters, you could notice that because Jesus says that pretty explicitly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll
tell you. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, there are some things that the Bible is very, very clear on.
Mm-hmm.
And loving your neighbor and the golden rule are crystal clear.
Yeah. Most of the world's religions agree on that point as well.
Yes.
Exactly.
And you'll hear these Christian people say, I'm sorry, that they'll say stupid stuff like God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve or whatever, you know, you've heard that foolery before. And one of my friends posted something to Facebook earlier this week, and I'm going to read it right quick. It says biblical marriage is between one man and two sisters after he worked 7 years for each of them. That's Jacob, Rachel, and Leah. Biblical marriage is between one man, his wives, his master's wives, given to him by God, and the wife of a man he murdered. That was David. Biblical marriage is between one man, 700 wives, and 300 concubines. That's Solomon. Biblical marriage is between one man in his 20s and one female child in her mid-teens, and that's Joseph and Mary. And it says the vast majority of the marriages depicted in the Bible are between a man and multiple women, or between a man and a female child who has purchased through a dowry. So when they say... we believe in biblical marriage. No, you don't. You believe in the version of biblical marriage that makes you comfortable. And if it's anything other than that, you're uncomfortable. And Amen. What I find out is a lot of these folks are in direct proximity in their immediate family, if not their own children, with transgender individuals or members who identify with the LGBTQ plus community. And they have ostracized and demonized and demeaned and isolated those people in the name of their ideology.
I love that. And now that I know you're into polyamory, I love what you just said even more, Pastor Rose. But let me also say, I always just say, God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. I'm like, no, God made Adam and Steve too, Reverend. And Adam and Steve can adopt some of them their accidents that Adam and Eve don't want. They always come at you with Matthew 19. Male and female, he made them, Jesus said. And that's why the man leaves the family and marries his wife and clings to his... They always say this to be against marriage equality and to be against transgender existence. Jesus says in Matthew 19, male and female... Mike Huckabee quotes it all the time. They always take it out of context because Matthew 19 is technically... Jesus coming out against straight divorce. They approach him and they talk about divorce law because Moses' divorce law was if you're tired of your wife, you no longer delight in her, kick her to the curb, which was a death sentence in the first century Holy Land. Yep. Jesus is saying there, if you divorce your wife for any reason other than adultery, you're in adultery, made her an adulterer. No, you got to stay together. And it's really Jesus being a feminist protecting women. And these people don't realize this. They think it's anti-gay marriage. It's anti-straight divorce. And every one of these people voted for Donald Trump. Good God.
Divorced three times. She's not all his wives, including the current one.
And they talk about that as if it's an injunction to get married.
Yes.
But guess who didn't get married?
Jesus.
The guy who said it.
Yeah. Or Paul.
And then the other guy who propagated the gospel amongst the Gentiles, who was either gay or asexual, in my opinion.
Oh, get me started on Paul. Yeah. Well, when Paul said it's better for a man to marry than burn in lust, That's the best biblical argument for gay marriage I ever heard.
There you go. Oh,
and if yeah, they keep reading, they'll get to Galatians where it says there is neither male nor female.
Male nor female in Christ.
That's right.
I mean, it was the late, great Archbishop of the Diocese of Newark, John Shelby Spong, who I had on this show when he was still with us, and he did my TV show. I met him on Bill Maher. He's the one who convinced me that St. Paul was probably a closeted gay man in the first century Holy Land, and that's why he could be so loving and forgiving, but so disgusted when it came to the unholy urges of his own sinful flesh. I mean, it makes real sense when you read his letters with that shame in mind. Yeah, so boom.
I suggested that to my Southern Baptist ex-wife one night when I was first starting to deconstruct, and I thought she was going to hide under the table, thinking that the lightning was going to hit me any moment.
Yeah, well, conservatives like Paul a lot more than they like Jesus. Let's be honest. They do. Paul,
yes,
like
they
Jesus
do.
Is this great liberal celebrity, and Paul's his really conservative PR guy. And I find that's the one they quote more. Keith, I want to ask you. I mentioned to you earlier today. I'm curious with our time remaining. We don't have a lot of time to talk about Israel and Gaza, but I'm curious what you think is the gospel-based response. We're all watching this, and we always point out how evil what Hamas was and what Israel's doing now is not helping Israel, making any Israel any safer. But what does a person of faith do in a situation like this?
Yeah, this is really one of the most difficult things to talk about, but I think it is definitely worth talking about. I would say that if you say the gospel-based response, you know, it's very difficult to love your enemies, especially when we see in this case, this isn't something, loving your enemies isn't something either side at this point is willing to consider. And I would say for those of us now kind of on the outside looking in to the situation, our challenge is to love them both, even as we weep for their suffering and their loss and the tragedy. I'd say the things that we can do maybe is call our representatives, demand that they do what they can to call for a ceasefire. I would urge Biden to withhold any further military aid. I think there's like a $10 billion extra thing kind of like sitting there. I would say, nope, you're not getting any of that money until you have a ceasefire, you allow aid to come in so Palestinian children don't starve to death. And beyond that, I think all we can do is pray.
Yeah.
There's nothing that looks like Jesus that's happening in the Gaza Strip. There's nothing that looks like loving your neighbor, and love, enemy love is one of the hardest things that Jesus taught, because he was actively in an occupied territory by an empire that didn't give two shits about Jewish people. They just wanted control of that region.
You're right.
And he still said we're to love our enemies. And as Keith said, these are two sides that are intractable. Mm-hmm. You've got two groups of people who are mutually wishing for the destruction of their other, of the enemy other.
Not all of them, but I know what you're saying.
No, I'm talking about the Netanyahu faction and the Hamas faction.
The extreme conservative faction of both religions, because it's always the extreme conservatives causing all the problems. And there are no conservative prophets in the entire Bible. I mean, you're right about Jesus's message to love your enemies. But at the same time, in the context of how he lived, his entire ministry was about social justice and uplifting people.
Oh, yeah.
Who are being oppressed. That's the entire message. That's why he got killed. That's why he was such a threat to the power structure.
Yeah,
I think so. I live in Lancaster County. This is an Anabaptist hotbed, so to speak. So we got Amish and Mennonite and Church of the Brethren and Dunkards. And the Mennonites have been going down from Lancaster to D.C. and getting arrested. So here's my call to every Christian in America. Sackcloth and ashes. Get yourself arrested until the peace starts happening. If you want to put on sackcloth and ashes because you think gay marriage is a problem, no, that's not the problem. What's happening in Gaza is the problem. That's the
issue. Jesus, you guys are brilliant. Pastor Rose, I know you wanted to weigh in on Gaza as well.
Yeah, I heard something on the news today that troubled me so deeply. Apparently, there were about 60, 65, 68, 70 orphans, Palestinian orphans that were evacuated by the army, I guess, with the help of the German embassy. It was about 68 children plus 11 staff and their families from Gaza to the Israeli occupied West Bank, I think near Bethlehem or wherever they put them. And this, for whatever reason, enraged the Israeli right. You know, they got a right wing just like we do, maybe even more so. And indeed. I was thinking, why would it enrage you that these children were evacuated? And it and the one of the most far right national security ministers, I'm not going to, his name is Itamar Ben-Gvir, but I probably butchered that name. He called this fake humane measures while the citizens of Israel continue to pay the price. And I thought, and then the finance minister, some guy named Bezalel Smotrich, he said he wanted to know who gave the immoral order. And I thought, how backwards can you be that you are angry that orphans got evacuated to a place of safety? Jesus. So I guess they should just stay there and starve and die, or what? That's how you know this is definitely a slow moving genocide, because it should not anger you that children are removed from danger. Children whose parents have been unalived by this war. What is wrong with you? What's wrong in your mind that made you upset? Can you imagine
somebody
being enraged, outraged?
No, I mean, I
that
totally get it.
Orphans were taken to safety.
And I keep saying none of this is making Israel safer. That's my big point. I think Israel deserves to live in peace and security with neighbors that recognize their right to exist. But I don't believe there's any military solution to this. And I think this is just Netanyahu prolonging his own criminal reckoning by staying in power as long as he can. I mean, I think Netanyahu may be gone before this war is over. I'm sorry, December?
It's just another version of what Trump is doing. Let me stay in this role as long as I can so I could avoid consequences as long as I can. And while I'm here, let me figure out how to, you know, destruct, remove a couple thousand, maybe a couple hundred thousand, however many I can get my hands on before I get called to a stop of Palestinians from around here, because we never wanted them around here to begin with. And we're using this as a reason to do what we've always wanted to do. They knew that the siege was going to happen on October 6th or 7th last year, whatever day. They had knowledge of that beforehand. They had those plans beforehand. And I am not a conspiracy theorist, but on this, I do have a conspiracy theory that I am fully confident about.
They knew
that they let it happen so that they could go in and do what they're doing.
I mean, Bush was warned before 9/11. Bush was warned before 9/11, and I'm not saying that they necessarily let it happen, but I'm saying they knew and they allowed it to happen. I mean, Egypt warned them. You know, everyone knew it was coming. And Netanyahu's the guy who spent 20 years keeping himself in power by boasting, "I kept you safe. Only I can keep you safe." That's also my Elon Musk voice, by the way.
What does that remind you of? Only I alone can do it.
Yes,
exactly right.
Well, that's every dictator everywhere.
That's right.
That's how they do it. That's how the fascists do. So we've only got a couple of minutes left. What I'd like to do is I just want to ask each of you, what is something you're optimistic about? And also let our listeners know where they can follow you. And let me begin with you, Mr. Giles. What are you feeling hopeful about? What's getting you out of bed in the morning?
Well, boy, that's a tough one, especially on short notice. I think I have hope for the fact that there are people out there that don't accept the bullshit, that are awake enough to notice and pay attention to what's going on and to speak up against it and stand up against it. And I just hope that there's more of that coming. And I guess along those lines, if you want to follow me anywhere, my books are on Amazon. Jesus Untangled is $2.99 on Kindle right now. So go check that out.
That's
and talk
book.
A lot about Christian nationalism. Yeah, thank you. And I blog on Pathos, KeithCharles.com. And happy to connect.
Mr. Dylan Cruz, how do we follow you, and what's giving you hope these days?
Hope is in short supply a lot of times, but I do find hope in the permaculture movement and also in the work of people like Jenny Cohn and Dr. Kristen Dumais.
Love them both.
And others that are shining halogen high beams on this Christian nationalist stuff because people need to know they're dangerous.
We're almost out of time. Dylan, how do we follow you really quick?
I'm all over social media and my books are on Amazon.
And Pastor Rose, I can give you about 15 seconds to dazzle us. Go ahead.
People speak of hope as if it is this delicate, ephemeral thing made of whispers and spider's webs, and it's not. Hope is dirt on her face, blood on her knuckles, the grit of the cobblestones in her hair, and just spat out a tooth as she rises for another go.
Damn.
Hope is strength and struggle. Keep hoping. Oh. That's a quote, Crow's Fault, that I saw today, and I just wanted to share it with you all. Keep hoping.
Thank you. Guys, I thank you all so much. You get me fired up every week. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.